Vaishnavrin.
Somagana Simadanda Shaganjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shigurveda Mahasa. We're going to continue with our study of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And so we're on the fourth chapter. The fourth chapter is entitled what? Does anyone know? Transcendental knowledge. And it deals with what transcendental knowledge is, the benefits of transcendental knowledge, and how to acquire transcendental knowledge. So we finished last week with the 13th text, which discusses what we call the Varnashram system. That means the Varnas and the Ashrams, which basically means the spiritual orders and the orders of work. Spiritual orders means the orders like Brahmachari, which is single student, Grahastha, which is married student, Vanaprastha, retired student, and Sannyas, professor. So, well, that's what the Varnashram system is arranged in such a way that different parts of the body can be compared to different parts of the Varnashram system. The Brahmachari is considered to be the what? The legs. And the Grahastha is considered to be stomach. Why the stomach? Not that he eats for the rest of society. Does anyone have an idea why this Grahastha is the stomach of society? What? He what?
Produces
the grains. He maintains the society. In other words, the other three orders are actually dependent upon the grahasthas in society. So it's a very important part of the society. If you don't have any grahasthas, like sometimes the spiritual movements, immature spiritual movements, encourage everyone to take sannyas, that means they all starve. So, and then after the grahastha, you have the vanaprastha, which is retired, as we mentioned last week in our discussion, that doesn't mean playing golf. That means to retire, to go to holy places, to do some service and spiritual activities, husband and wife together. Sannyas basically means to renounce this world, to have no more interest in the world except for helping people become Krishna conscious. Actually, the word sannyas means two things, san and yas. One is to renounce, the other one is to accept. And that means to accept things for service of Krishna. So that's the four spiritual orders and the four orders of duties in this world, that is the Brahmana, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, are according to one's mode of nature. Like some people are attracted to intellectual activities, that's a Brahman. And some people are attracted to management, they love management, and they love fighting, defending. Kshatriya doesn't mean someone who likes to fight. You know, sometimes people have that misunderstanding that my child, he loves to fight and beat up his friends. He must be a Kshatriya. That's not true. He might be anything, we can't say. We don't want to offend anyone. But a Kshatriya wants to protect people. Kshatriya, Triyate, to protect people from harm. So that's a Kshatriya. And a Vaishya, he engages in commerce or farming, and basically maintains the rest of the society. And the Vaishya is also the stomach of society, just like the Grahastha is considered the stomach of the spiritual orders. So these orders, just want, the reason I'm mentioning this again is that we should understand that this system has been created by Krishna, which Krishna mentions in the 13th text here. It's not something that was man-made. Man, or people, have made the system that we call the caste system, in which people are put into different roles in society according to their birth, according to their name. Like if someone has the name Trivedi, which means three Vedas, or Chaturvedi, or Dwivedi, or Ekavedi. I know, there's no such name as Ekavedi. But if someone has a name like that, then you say, oh, he's a Brahmin. But he may not be a Brahmin. He may be Shudra or Vaishya. I mean, we see many Trivedis opening up shops, cloth shops. And that means they're acting as a Vaishya. There's nothing wrong with that, and there's many. I mean, who is a Vaishya that we worship? Starts with an N.
Nanda
Maharaj, and also Krishna. You know, Krishna. So there's nothing wrong. If Krishna could do it, if Krishna could be born or appeared in a Vaishya family, so we can, no complaints. No complaints. I mean, and the Brahmanas, And you have the story in Krishna Leela that some of the brahmanas didn't actually know what Brahman was, because that's the definition of brahmana. And when Krishna asked for food, he had his coward boys ask these ritualistic brahmanas for food. What did the ritualistic brahmanas say? Anyone? No?
No.
They ignored the coward boys. They said, these are vicious. What do we have to... And that's Krishna. And what did the wives of the brahmanas say when they were asked? Does anyone know the story? Yeah, we want to go to Krishna, and their husbands were saying, stop, 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 stop. And they were saying, they didn't even notice their husbands. Just like their husbands didn't notice the coward boys, they didn't notice their husbands. In the same way, they got a reaction. For not noticing Krishna's dear associates, then they didn't, for the Brahmins not noticing Krishna's dear associates, the Brahmins' wives didn't notice them. That would be very frustrating, have your wife leave you and just say, I'm going to serve Krishna. And that's what they did. So here you have the Brahmana's wives, more elevated than the Brahmana's. So really, we understand people to be of a particular nature by their guna and karma, by their qualities and work. So someone born in America or born in Africa or anywhere could be a Brahmin by his quality, if he has those qualities. And someone born with the name Chaturvedi, whatever name, could be a Shudra. You know, really doesn't matter according to birth. Because according to birth, in Kali Yuga, guess what? Kalo Shudra Sambhava. You know, everybody is born, you know, with the mode of nature of ignorance. And then samskara bhavet vijam. By the proper association, samskara means like association, reformatory measure, then one becomes dvija, twice born, and can elevate himself. So in other words, nurture is more important than nature. Does everyone understand the difference between that? Nurture is what happens to you after you're born, how you're nurtured by your mother, how you're nurtured by association at school, how you're nurtured by your association of work, how you're nurtured by your video games that you play, right? Your iPad or iPod. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. So, about TV programs, Bollywood, that's nurture. Nurture is part, the Bollywood movies you watch are nurturing you in a certain way. So, enough on that. So that's the Varnashram system, guna and karma. So we want to go on and talk about the doer after this, which is a very important topic in the Gita. Like, who is the doer? Who is responsible? Did the devil make you do it? Did God make you do it? Is he responsible? Are you just like someone who's under the influence of all of God's energies and you have no responsibility, you're just blown by the wind, just riding the waves like a surfer, and it's not your fault for anything? So we're going to find out about that in the next text. So the next text deals with, or actually even text 13 deals with the doer, where Krishna says, I'm just going to finish up text 13, then we'll continue with the reading. Where Krishna says, I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. In other words, Krishna is not really responsible for what happens to you because you're the one who's responsible for the sufferings and enjoyments, which is an interesting statement Krishna later on makes in the Bhagavad Gita. He says the material energy is responsible for the actions and reactions, which means it's set up in a certain way. I mean, I'll give you an example. Material energy, law of gravity. What? What is the law of gravity? No one knows. What goes up must come down. And the law of gravity was written by Krishna, yes. But if you jump off this porch, is it the fault of the law of gravity? Tell me. It was Krishna's fault. You know, he made the stupid law of gravity so that I broke my legs when I jumped off the porch. No, you fool. Krishna wrote the law of gravity, but you decided to do something, try to counteract the law, which you can't counteract. You can counteract sometimes man-made laws, particularly if you get a radar detector, fuzzbuster, as they used to say. You know what that is? You can, when you see the police coming, if you slow down and act nice. I was just taking a long drive. I drove to around Charlotte. And when I saw the police car by the side of the road, I just like naturally slowed the car down, looked very innocent. It was like that. And fortunately, I didn't get a ticket. But, you know, God has radar traps everywhere. And then we don't have a device that can detect the super soul yet. You know, that's the next electronic device Jagadguru's going to design, you know. So it beeps when the super soul, it'll be beeping all the time. Super soul's here, slow down, act nice, pious. Like that. So anyway, so Krishna is not the one who's responsible. When you try to break the laws of nature, you're going to get a reaction. It's as simple as that. You know, fire burns, whether you believe in it, whether you don't believe in it, whether you agree with it, whether you don't agree with it, it doesn't really matter. So Krishna is not the doer in that sense. Okay, so let's go on to text 14, in which he describes more of what it means to be not the doer. Let's finish with this one first. So the question is, who's the doer? The jiva, the doer, the Ishwar? Ishwar is Krishna, of course. Or prakriti, material nature. And as we described before, the answer to that question is the person who's responsible is jiva. Jiva means you, because you are the jiva. Jiva is the individual soul. Vishnu Tattva is the supreme soul. And then prakriti is the energy of the supreme personality of Godhead. Okay? So text 14, who's going to read text 14? Volunteers.
There is no word with affecting me, nor do I aspire for the truth of affection. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fleeting reactions of me.
So this is very important because Krishna is described in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam as Swarat. And there's several words that are used. Swarat is one of them. Like, he's self-sufficient. He can fulfill his own desires. So he doesn't need or depend on anyone else. He doesn't need this material energy to be happy. Like, we require the fruits of our activities, whereas Krishna can fulfill all of his desires just by desiring it. Sometimes people look at or hear stories like this Aladdin's lamp story, where a genie pops out of the bottle and says, "Your wish is my desire." And even there's been books written about this. There's one book, The Secret. Ooh. Anyone's heard of that book, The Secret? That if you really concentrate on something, want something enough, and even in the movie of The Secret, has anyone seen that movie? They depicted a genie, a real genie, who would come out, who is the material energy personified somehow or other. And if you wanted something enough, you just meditated on it. Yes, your wish is, you know. So let's say if I wanted a sports car, they depicted a person who wanted a sports car, then I would just simply have to sit down in wherever I was sitting down in the temple room and make believe I'm shifting my sports car. You saw that movie, in the part of the movie? Yeah. And then I walk outside after the class and there'd be a Mercedes. Or, I'm sorry, that's not a sports car. Or Beamer would be outside. So that's not the way the material energy works. I got news for you. It doesn't work like that. But Krishna has control, or his energies are so obedient to him that whenever he wants something, he doesn't even have to meditate on it. It happens immediately. That's apta kama. His desire is fulfilled. Because his energy... You can open the window a little bit because it's a little warm in here. It's actually 82 degrees. Summertime now. So Krishna's energies are all first-class servants. So whenever Krishna wants something, he gets it. And so he doesn't need anything. I'll give you an example from the Vedic literatures about this. Once upon a time, Krishna, in the form of Narayan Rishi, was meditating... Bhadrikashram. He was always meditating, and the demigods, they got real envious of this, because basically Indra thought, this guy is meditating. He just thought he was a guy. This guy is meditating because he wants to take my position. The demigods, they get very nervous when they see someone is very austere, performing sacrifice, especially horse sacrifices, and then they sent down, either Agents of Cupid or some other title where they steal the horse and the horse sacrifice to try to interfere with the person's austerities. So here's Narayan Rishi, Krishna, and Arjuna too. And so they were meditating, and Indra thought, well, this is getting too much, you know, they're getting too powerful. So he sent down Cupid. Actually, Cupid's Day is coming up, right? February 14th. We celebrate that here. Anyway, we don't. So he sent down Cupid with all these Cupidettes, you know, dancing girls from the heavenly planets, the Apsaras. This is a story from the Bhagavatam. I'm not just making this up. He sent them down, and they were dancing in front of Narayan Rishi. You know, Cupid was firing his arrows of the attachment of form, taste, smell, and touch. There's actually a Cupid. He's called Ananga because he's invisible. Lord Shiva burnt him to ashes. So he stays away from Lord Shiva nowadays. But Lord Shiva burnt him into ashes. That means he has no limbs. And so he's firing at people when they least expect it. You know, all of a sudden some poor brahmachari is sitting there. Falls in love. So got to watch out. You have to wear a shield around your tongue. So then what happened? He started firing his arrows at this Narayan Rishi. And Narayan Rishi basically just yawned. You know, and he said, this is all you got? And Narayan Rishi produced someone much more beautiful than the Cupidettes, much more beautiful than the Apsaras. And he said, you can pick these one of these beautiful girls that I'm producing. You can take one back with you. And that's how Urvasi was produced. It's a story from the Bhagavatam. Urvasi was produced, you know, Urvasi, the famous gun, Apsara, she was produced directly from Narayan Rishi. And so here you see Krishna, he doesn't need anything. He can take care of himself. He's independent, swarat, and therefore he's aptakama. So therefore, materially, there's nothing you can do for God. I mean, there's nothing you can get for him. The only thing, he is lacking one thing. What is God lacking? Your love. He has enough love from Radharani, but he's lacking you. And that really shows love. You know, generally we love someone because they fulfill a particular need that we have, right? Like, you know, we have a need for someone to iron my clothes, wash my laundry, or whatever it is. So we love someone. Or if someone makes money, supports me, I love them, you know. If someone gives me a diamond necklace, not me, of course. But, you know, isn't it? Diamonds are the girl's best friend. You ever hear that before? So, you know, you have a diamond ring. Oh, I see how much he loves me. What does that have to do with love? I never figured that out. So Krishna doesn't need any of those things. So this is really what's spoken here. Whatever you do, it doesn't affect him. But he really wants you for your sake, because of you. That's real love. He doesn't love us because of what we can do for him. He loves us because of what he can do for us. Wow. Because of his absolute positive concern and love for us, he knows that that's the only way we'll enjoy. He's already enjoying. You know, what does he need another servant in the spiritual world? Is that Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sambrabha, right? Sevimanam. He has thousands, millions of Lakshmis. What does he need me hanging around for? So therefore, he's in our heart, and that's how much he loves us. But so this is the point. Krishna confirms his position as the non-doer. He acts, but he doesn't act karmically or for his own self-interest. So one understands, I'll read the last sentence in this verse. One who understands this truth also does not become entangled in the fruitive reactions of work. Why does he understand? Because he understands Krishna as his well-wisher. As mentioned in the fifth chapter of the Gita, Krishna Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshram. Krishna is the well-wisher, the friend of all living entities. And then he says, this person really cares for me. I want to dedicate myself to him. So that's the beginning of bhakti. So 15, text 15.
All the liberated souls in ancient times acted to this understanding of my transcendence, which is that you perform your duty following their footsteps.
So in other words, understanding that Krishna doesn't need anything, but He's giving you your duties for your own sake. You know, the Varnashram system is not so he can just keep everything in order and be happy so you won't bother him in the spiritual world. And so you'll create things and do things in this world. It's for your sake. You know, bhakti yoga is for your sake, not for Krishna's sake. Varnashram system is for our sake. Like, of course, in the material world, you find a king, you know, mundane king, who will organize things for his sake so that he'll get more taxes and or whatever he's getting from the citizens. But it's simply the best thing for us. And Krishna's completely detached in the sense that he doesn't get anything from it. I mean, this is... I mean, even insofar as dealing with spiritual personalities, we have faith in spiritual personalities who are just giving us spiritual knowledge without getting anything in return. Like if you find someone with a motive, another motive, especially what's called a pecuniary motive, a financial motive, someone who's preaching because he's going to get some money from it or get paid for it, I mean, that really pollutes the relationship. But Krishna's relationship is pure. You know, this is for your benefit, this Varnashram system. And just fight. This is what I told you to do. It's for your benefit to fight. And this is what previous, what devotees did and great personalities did in the past. Okay. It's very interesting how this is developing. So text 16 to 24. Let me just see something. Yeah. 16 to 24 is understanding karma on the platform of jnana. So why don't... just read through those. Someone can read, and we'll switch readers.
Even the intelligent are bewildered in determining what is action and what is inaction. Now I shall explain to you what action is, knowing which you shall be liberated from all misfortune.
Okay, and the next text, because these are all very much connected. And the next text is sometimes very confusing.
One receives action in inaction. One receives inaction in action and action in inaction. An intelligent amongst men. And he is in transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activity.
All right, so these few verses, I really have to explain them, and they're not explained nicely in the PowerPoint, but... It appears to be very confusing. Action and inaction and inaction and action. What does that mean? So let's talk about the word for action. The word for action is karma. So karma can mean either work or action, or it can mean the result from an action. So when we talk about inaction and action, that if one executes karma, the work for Krishna... You got that? Krishna karma. In this particular sense, the word karma means work for Krishna. Then there's no reaction. There's no karma. Does everyone follow that? If you execute karma, work for Krishna, there's karma defined as one thing, then there's no karmic reaction to that karma. I mean, it sounds a little confusing, but the karma is defined differently. In the same sentence, we're defining the word karma differently. So this is what Krishna is saying. And if you try to be inactive materially, which is impossible, as long as you're alive, you're not inactive materially. Why? Does anyone know that? Why? Why is it impossible to be inactive materially? Soul is present, and what are you doing? You're breathing. You're eating. You know, even if you sit there in the Himalayas or whatever you're going to do and just eat your raw food, you're still performing activity. And because that's karma in that sense, because if that karma is not for Krishna, if it is not Krishna karma, then you get a karmic reaction. Is that clear for everyone? So this is really the difference between action and inaction. It's a pretty easy thing to understand. Work done for Krishna has no karmic reaction. Any other activity has a karmic reaction. Activity in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance has a karmic reaction. There's also good karma. Good karma gets you good results, materially good results, but it entangles you in this world. And ultimately, you can go to the heavenly planets. What is the problem with the heavenly planets we mentioned the other day? It's where? You have to go back. And you forget Krishna there. And basically, you're in sophisticated Maya. You know, it's a real sophisticated Maya. And it's so attractive. You know, the heavenly society girls are dancing this way and that way. And you never get old, never get sick. And you don't die until you leave. But no old people there. So anyway, there's good karma and bad karma, but a devotee is interested in no karma. And the only way, a karma, means without karma, the only way you can do that is serving Krishna. By whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, should be done as an offering to Krishna. Okay, in text 19... So if one is in knowledge about work, so Krishna is here talking about knowledge about work, because that's in reference to the last few verses, then everything you do will be in terms of service to Krishna. Because that's the only way you can be devoid of desire for sense gratification. I mean, there's no other way. Sometimes you may think you can become devoid of desire for sense gratification just by negating your attraction to the sense object. Doesn't work, because then you'll be attracted to another sense object. Let's say I give up all sense objects and I just sit here meditating. Then what happens? I become very proud of my meditation, or proud of what I'm doing, or proud of my austerities. So I'm not really giving up. I'm just substituting one for the other. But when you have bhakti, then that perfect knowledge, that desire, that devotion is the only way to give up self-centered desire. Even the desire for mukti is self-centered. What is that? A bhukti mukti siddhi kam. So these are the different kams or desires within this world. Bhukti, mukti, and siddhi. Bhukti means sense gratification. Mukti means liberation. Siddhi means powers within this world. Or the four purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. They're all based on me. And the panchama purushartha, the desire to please Krishna or desire to attain love of Krishna, is based on pleasure of Krishna. So text 20, okay, who wants to read text 20?
Abandoning all attachment to the result of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruitful action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings.
That's pretty much the same thing. I don't think we need to give it another explanation of that, except here it's described, nice karma yoga performed by a devotee or a sadhaka. Text 21 and 22.
Such a man of understanding acts with mind and intelligence perfectly controlled, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his position, and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by sinful desire.
So here, and this, I just want to mention this, here in this verse, and also text 22. Why don't you read text 22 also, because they're together.
He who is satisfied with gain, which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions.
So in this verse, we're describing someone on a very elevated platform of devotional service. And the example we gave here is like Madhavendra Puri, who when he went to Vrindavan, he didn't ask anyone for food. He just waited to see if Krishna would provide it. So because he knew Krishna would provide it. So we're not expecting people to imitate this advanced stage of devotional service. We should aim for that, but not imitate that particular stage. And that's what a sadhu is. Okay, so it's perfected, nice karma yoga. Nice karma yoga and nishkarma yoga performed by a siddha. Okay, so text 25. Whoops. Well, actually, we skipped ahead. Okay, text 23. Wait, we skipped that. And that goes together with 24, and I'll explain that. That's not explained here. I'll explain that. Text 24, who wants to read that?
The person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature.
Yeah, so in this particular Sanskrit verse, the word is, the second one is chavir, which means butter or ghee. So those of you who are familiar with fire sacrifices know that when you offer butter or ghee into a sacrifice, that butter or ghee becomes purified. So what Krishna is indicating here is that when one serves him, even with the material nature, not only does his consciousness become transformed, but even the very material nature which he is utilizing to serve Krishna with becomes transformed. The example Srila Prabhupada gives in this regard is that of an expert electrician. The expert electrician can take the electrical energy and either make it cool or heat. He can transform one into the other one. So Krishna's energy is originally spiritual. So when we use something in his energy, it becomes spiritualized. Another example Srila Prabhupada gave, I'll ask you all, what's another example Srila Prabhupada gave?
Iron rod.
Iron rod, yeah. And what happens with the iron rod? How? It's put in the fire. Prabhupada said it becomes hot, red hot, white hot, and then it becomes like fire. So when we engage in devotional service, not only our soul becomes spiritualized or purified, the body becomes purified, our home becomes purified, the things we use for Krishna become purified. It all becomes part of spiritual paraphernalia. So this is really what's mentioned here. So if you want to be spiritual, or if you engage in Krishna service 24 hours a day, then everything is part of your devotion. This is another question that I think Hrishikesh raised last week. Does Krishna consciousness mean giving up everything to become spiritual? I think you asked that question. Like renouncing everything, my home, my wife, everything. No. It means engaging all those things in his service, and those things attain a spiritual quality, or those personalities attain a spiritual quality. You engage whatever you want. Manasa deha geha yokishamura arvilum tuya pari nandakishore. Understanding that everything belongs to Krishna, you arrange or engage everything in Krishna's service, and then it regains its original spiritual quality. And you see this. Like Prabhupada commented that when people would see his disciples, they would ask, even though they were born in America, are you Americans? Because they would glow. Or maybe they are glowing still. But anyway, so they would. Like even there was a devotee, even someone, just a stranger in New York, who saw Prabhupada walking down the street and said, that man is glowing. And I had experience. Actually, the first time I met Prabhupada, he sat on the Vyasasana, of course. And then I looked at the Vyasasana right after he sat on it because we were carrying it to the airport, which was a mistake. And I looked at the Vyasasana, and the footmarks were glowing. I mean, they're actually glowing. I mean, I'm not just making that up. So it's just by coming in contact with, you know, completely pure spiritual personality, the material nature was transformed. And my mother was very fortunate. She got to sleep on the same bed after Prabhupada had left that Prabhupada had utilized. And now she's becoming Krishna conscious as a result of that. So even something used by a pure devotee, that's why we have the remnants of a pure devotee. You can use any of the remnants of the pure devotee except for what?
The shoes.
The shoes and the seat, you know, stuff like that. So prasadam offered to Krishna is called mahaprasadam, and when it's offered to Krishna's devotee, it becomes the remnant is called what? Mahaprasadam. So that's why we find described that very purifying substances are like the foot bathing water, the pure devotee, and Westerners have a hard time understanding this. Foot bathing water, the pure devotees, or the prasadam remnants of the pure devotee, or the dust. I would walk behind Srila Prabhupada many, many years ago on the beach and just take the sand from his footprints and throw the sand in my mouth. Did anyone ever do anything like that? No. And then I would take, many times I would make a trick when after Prabhupada finished his prasad, I'd take the whole plate and tell the devotees I was going to distribute it, but take the whole plate for myself. And there was another story when Prabhupada offered a sweet ball. I wasn't there for this story, but Prabhupada offered a sweet ball to someone, and the devotee, being very humble, offered obeisances. Thank you very much, Prabhupada. And the devotee next to him grabbed the sweet ball from his hand as he was offering obeisances, and Prabhupada laughed. He said, he's making great spiritual advancement. So you see, I mean, what's a sweet ball made out of? You know, sugar, that particular thing was called the Simply Wonderful, which is Prabhupada invented the Simply Wonderful. It was sugar and powdered milk and butter, and there were some raisins, and there were some bananas in it. I don't remember what else was there. But I used to eat a lot of them, and they were good. So, but then you have some material ingredients. Prabhupada actually talks about just material ingredients, and then become spiritualized, prasadam. That's what prasadam is. And you have Lord Chaitanya saying that he was taking Lord Jagannath's prasadam. He said, just made from these regular material ingredients, yet it has a taste of heavenly nectar, you know, spiritual nectar. So there's a transformation, which is really interesting, that occurs. And anyone who's performed devotional service has experienced that, not just in his consciousness, but in anything he uses, there's a transformation. People experience, too, they come in this temple room. And the temple room has just been used for hearing and chanting about Krishna and worshiping Krishna. I mean, we haven't used it for anything else. It's not a building that we built, you know, for a Bollywood film showing or something like that, and then later on transformed it into a temple room. It's always been a temple room. So there's a very special atmosphere. So the atmosphere becomes transformed. So these are, I'm just giving different illustrations of this particular point of transformation. Where Krishna says here in the 24th chapter, which we just read, 24th verse, that a person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spirit because of his full contribution to spiritual activities. And also another word used here is brahma karma samadhina. That means he's completely absorbed. Have you ever heard the word samadhi? It means absorption. So he's completely absorbed in brahma karma, work for Krishna, Brahman, the Supreme Brahman. Very important point. So that's nice. All right, we have to go on to the next verse. And text 25, who wants to read that?
Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them, and some offer sacrifices to the fire of the Supreme Brahman.
That's just one type of yogi. So let's go on to the next text. Text 26.
Some of them sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of the controlled mind, and others sacrifice objects of the senses, such as sound in the fire of sacrifice.
And here Krishna is talking about the four varnas and the four ashrams again, like brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. And text 27.
Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the light, breath as oblation into the fire of control.
Oh, mind. And that's a Hatha Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga mentioned there. 28. These are different types of aspiring spiritualists.
Practicing the yoga of eight
And 29. Who wants to read 29?
Still others who are finding the process of directing strength to remaining trance, practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming, and the incoming breath into the outgoing, and thus at last remaining trance, stopping all breathing. Others, preparing the remaining process, offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice.
So all these things sound very difficult. And these are different stages of the path of self-realization, which ultimately culminates in devotion to Krishna. So we're very fortunate performing bhakti yoga that we automatically surpass all these stages just by the hearing and chanting and worshiping process. So we don't have to worry about these. You don't have to worry about offering the incoming breath into the outgoing breath, and the outgoing breath and the incoming breath, and all the different yoga postures. Incidentally, all these different yoga postures, they're modern invention. Patanjali, he only taught one or two yoga postures. That may come as a surprise to those of you who've studied yoga. He only taught one or two. The rest of the stuff you're learning is just something modern. Because Patanjali taught in the Yoga Sutras, first of all, the purpose of all these breathing things, postures, going to a secluded place, restrictions, yam yam, yam niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, jhana, and samadhi. Purpose of all those is to stop the turning of the mind and ultimately to fix your mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, maybe we should end here. Any questions or comments? We don't want to go on. Yeah, we've gone on for 41 minutes. So, any questions or comments about the points we've been making? Yes. Okay, that is a very good question. So she wanted me to define actually what sacrifice is. How is it applicable for us? You know, correct me if I miss something. How it's applicable for us, what does sacrifice mean in different contexts. So let's take the word sacrifice itself. And sacrifice generally means in English to give up something, right? But when we, in the Vedic context, refer to the word sacrifice, it means to offer something to someone or to make some offering. So there's something else other than just giving up. Like if I say, I'm sacrificing my car. You know, I'm giving up my car. In English, that would generally mean that. So, in the Vedic context, it means to perform some ceremony or some performance or some activity for a higher goal. And that's the general meaning we're talking about here. So here, sometimes people are sacrificing. Let's go back a little bit here. Sacrificing their eating or breathing or many of their activities, their sense gratification, in order to attain some spiritual upliftment. However, here's another one. Curtailing the eating process offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. So these are different types of, let's say, austerity that one performs, giving up something for a higher spiritual goal. So in this day and age, to answer your question about how does this apply to us, the sacrifice that is recommended is yajyahi sankirtanam prayar yajantihi sumedasa, is sankirtan, performing the chanting of the Lord's holy names. In other ages, each and every age, there's specific sacrifices that are prescribed. In the Satya Yuga, for example, the sacrifice of this meditational yoga system. In the Treta Yuga, there's the sacrifice of very opulent, like fire sacrifices. Like you see, Lord Ram, for example, performed many of these Ashwamedha sacrifices. In the Treta Yuga, there's the sacrifice of the opulent deity worship. And in the Kali Yuga, there's the sacrifice of Sankirtan, or the chanting of the Lord's holy names. So these are all different types of sacrifice that one is enjoined to perform according to specific yugas. Does that answer the question? So, yeah, sacrifice simply doesn't mean giving up something. Like in Kali Yuga, we don't have to sacrifice anything in terms of giving up anything. We take something. Yeah.
Okay, the word sacrifice, of course, from the Latin, which means to make sacred.
To make sacred, very good. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that Latin derivation. Yeah, sacro. To make sacred. Very good. Very good. I wasn't aware of the Latin derivation of that word. Good. Thank you. So any other questions? Purva? Yeah.
You delineated the
differential
of karma and
Vikarma, akarma. Krishna karma. Krishna karma. Work done for Krishna creates no reaction. What does it create? It creates bhakti. Like this is the description given in the final verse. It puts one on the platform of transcendence. One of the final verses we read was this: Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagno Brahmanauhutam Brahmatena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhanam. If one makes a full contribution to Brahman, works for Brahman, in other words, then everything becomes transformed into spiritual energy. So that's the Krishna karma has that object and result. It transforms everything. Your home. I mean, the great Vaishnava acharyas describe how their home becomes like Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means without anxiety. So it's not necessary, you know, when I was referring to Rishikesh's question, it's not necessary to give everything up to engage in spirituality. It's to engage everything in spiritual things, and then you're giving it to Krishna. And probably gives the example of someone who has left his money in the street or dropped his wallet on the street. So when you see that money, the honest thing to do would be to give it back to the person to whom it belongs. But you can do two other things. The two other things you can do is, one is take it. You know, that's a natural impulse. Or the other thing is to say, I renounce it. And both of those are not on a very high platform. So with this world, we can interact in that way too. We can try to enjoy this world or renounce this world. But neither of those two alternatives is actually spiritual. Obviously, enjoying is not spiritual, and renouncing is not spiritual, and it's not even honest, because if you say renounce something that never belonged to you to begin with, how is that honest? You can't renounce something. Like if I, let's say you have a very nice computer, and I say, I renounce your computer. Foolish. How can I renounce your computer? It never belonged to me to begin with. I can renounce my own computer, which I'm not going to do, because I'm too attached. But so in other words, nothing belongs to you. So how can you be a renouncer? Therefore, we have the word sannyas. Sun means to accept. Yas means to what? To reject. Yasi. You know, son, yes, accept and reject. Accept things that are favorable for Krishna and not engage in things for one's own enjoyment. Therefore, whatever ashram one is situated in, whether it's, you know, brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, if one engages everything in Krishna's service, then he can become a pure devotee. Yat karosi, yat asnasi, yat jahoshi, yat dasi, yat... That is, whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away should be engaged or given to me, Krishna says, as an offering to me. And that way, you'll be perfectly renounced. Is it, you follow that? So one doesn't have to give up anything. Not only in terms of one's family, but you don't have to give up your talent. Let's say you're an artist, like Prabhupada would say this. You can paint for Krishna. If you're, whatever you are, you are a cook. So you can cook for Krishna, right? We got something for everybody. If you like to fight, join the army. No, if you're a kshatriya by nature, as we define kshatriya, means one who likes to protect and one who likes to manage. We got a lot of management positions open in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Just see me after class. You can have my position if you want. And yeah, it's open, you know. I'm resigning. I'm retiring. Chanting Hare Krishna. So, or if you like to do artistic things, be an artist for Krishna. Right? You know, paint pictures of Krishna. Don't paint pictures of, you know, mundane whatever, of just mountains. Paint pictures of Krishna. So there's something for everybody, except for a butcher. I mean, I guess you can cut asparagus instead of whatever. So we have something for everybody. So, and by doing that, one should remain stani stita shudikatam tan banmanovir. One remains in their own position and engages in shudikatam, in hearing and chanting. That's the advice Lord Chaitanya gave. In fact, Lord Chaitanya was touring South India, and there was a Brahmin who wanted to follow him and leave his home. And Lord Chaitanya said, never think or say anything like that. Just remain where you are. And he quoted from Lord Brahma's verse, stani sita shudikatam tan ban manobir. Just remain where you are. So that's what we need. That's what people should do. Because otherwise, if people artificially become renounced, then they'll become bachelor daddies. You understand what I'm talking about? There's enough of those in the United States right now. We don't need any more. So we want people staying in the position, understanding their psychophysical nature, and engaging in everything, and then go back to Godhead. I mean, many of the best devotees of Krishna in Vrindavan, I don't remember too many sannyasis in Goloka Vrindavan. Right? Nanda Maharaj was married, right? I think so.
Yeah.
Who was his wife's name? Shodamayi. You know, Krishna was the only brahmacharya in Vrindavan. Why was that? Because he was dancing with all these gopis in the middle of the night and wasn't disturbed. There was that whole riddle, you know, Krishna's the best brahmacharya because he danced with all these gopis, the most beautiful girls in creation, and he didn't feel any material desire. So he's a real brahmacharya. So if you can do that, you're a real brahmacharya. So, you know, most of Krishna's devotees, if you look at our disciplic succession, some of the great, great, great devotees were married with family. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had so many children, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur and so many of the Vaishnavas in our Sampradaya. And we have sannyasis too. So it's a question of just remaining where you are, engaging what you have in Krishna's service. And everybody can do something in pushing forward the Krishna conscious movement. Everything is needed. We needed all sorts of people to do different duties. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, Rishikesh.
What I want to understand is there is no work that affects me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one who understands Krishna's transcendental position. Let's refer back to the beginning of the chapter. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo vaiti tatvataha chakvadeham punar janma naiti mamo eti sojana. One who understands the nature of Krishna's activities as being transcendental, then basically he doesn't take birth again in this material world. So one who understands, what does transcendental mean? It means above or beyond, to transcend. I'm sure that there's some Latin derivation for that, but I don't know what it is. So basically, the Krishna is above this world, and by serving Krishna, his nature is Satchidananda, and by serving Krishna, we'll realize our Satchidananda nature. Then one acts accordingly if one has that particular knowledge. Realized knowledge with faith, not just book knowledge, but realized knowledge with faith. So one understands that Krishna has nothing to do really with this material world. In Goloka Ivinivashati Akilatna Bhuta, where is he? He's in Goloka Vrindavan. He never leaves Goloka Vrindavan. By his expansion, he's everywhere as the super soul. One who understands that will take as his goal to go back to the spiritual world. Because everyone wants to be Sat, Chit, and Ananda, right? Doesn't everyone want to be happy, full of knowledge, and not die or be eternal, realize one's eternal nature? And then you realize that about Krishna, and I could be there too. Don't you want to go? I mean, I want to go. I mean, I'm sick and tired of this place. Of course, that's the reason the material world is the way it is. It's because Krishna arranges it like that for our benefit. But I'd like to be a place where I don't get old, don't get sick, don't get arthritis. Everybody's nice, you know, no politics, no tea party. No tea party. No revolutions. What else? No death. And you can play with Krishna every day and see Krishna every day. That would be nice, wouldn't it? So one understands that's the transcendental nature of Krishna. You want to be with him. You want to be interacting with him. So any other questions or comments? Yeah. Well, wanting liberation, moksha, is simply the negation, usually taken as the negation of the miseries of this world. I want to get out of here. Isn't it? I want to get out of this world. Then you become an impersonalist who simply performs austerities to become detached from this world. Like you see, there's some indication of that in some of the rules of Buddhism, like this material world is suffering. Suffering is caused by attachment, right? Give up the attachment, give up the suffering, and then you do the Eightfold Path is the method of doing that. And we're not disagreeing with that. But it's just people are motivated by the self-centered desire of wanting to become free from suffering. And you don't get liberated by that point. And even if you do merge ultimately, we're not specifically speaking about Buddhism, but if you do merge through the impersonal process in the energy of the Lord, the Brahma Jyoti, then Aruyukachena Param Padam Pada Patantiya Trita Yushmad Angrayaha, you'll ultimately come down to this world again after you get sick and tired of being in the Brahma Jyoti, after you get tired of being liberated. Let's say you can be liberated, all right, I liberate you from all your pain, but you can't do anything. You just have to sit there being liberated. You know, no more pain. You don't get old. You don't get sick. But you also can't think. You also can't watch TV. You just have to sit there and be free from pain and free from anxiety and free from distress. Would you like that? No, it's not very attractive. So that's the moksha without bhakti. But with bhakti, there's this whole positive aspect. And the positive aspect is you get to have a relationship with loving. You have a loving propensity, and that loving propensity is one of your basic needs, is not being satisfied in this world. And so if you invest your loving propensity in Krishna, in your relationship with Krishna, and in the spiritual world, they have one of five types of relationships. And, you know, peaceful adoration or servitude or friendship or parental or conjugal love, then you actually become happy. That's why bhukti mukti siddhi kam sakalaya shanta krishna bhakta nishkam ateva shanta. That if you're looking for sense gratification, liberation, or become a powerful person or a powerful yogi siddhi in this world, you're not going to be peaceful because it's not your constitutional position. Then krishna bhakta nishkam, if you're nishkam, that means free of desires in this world, and then atayiva shanta, you will be peaceful. Okay? So I think we've gone on long enough. We want to thank everybody for listening very nicely. And we're going to have I think we're going to have the feast in here because it's kind of chilly outside and there's wind. And we'll see everybody when I come back from India. I'm going to Vrindavan and also Mayapur for our GBC meetings. And then I'll be back in the beginning of March for Gaur Purnima. That's Lord Chaitanya. What day is Gaur Purnima here? What's that?
Eighth.
Is that? What day of the week is that?
Thursday.
It's a Thursday. So we'll have a big celebration for Gaur Purnima here, and that'll be arranged. I'm sure you'll get notice and emails about that. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.